It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
So what do you got for the 522 burn?
I don't know. We had our neighbors over for dinner.
You got to know your neighbors?
We invited the Mormons over.
How was it?
It was good.
How? Yeah?
We had a great time.
Yeah. And?
They came over with their four kids and had dinner with us one evening.
Only four?
No, be nice. They're my neighbors, as I said. I don't know if they listen to this. She's read the Jake book.
They had, really?
Yeah, they hadn't read the Shack, but I'd already given it to them. And we had a pretty interesting conversation, particularly he and I. I mean, we were all together for a while and then to run and get kids and come back. But he's a former pro football guy, so we talked a bit of football. And then we were talking, and he said, what do you do exactly? And I was explaining to him.
That'd be a cute answer.
Why are you?
What do you say?
Yeah, well, it's a long story. It was a two-hour conversation. But then it was
this, that, and the other.
Then it was, why are you still not pastoring? So that led to another discussion. And then he made the comment. We're sitting later, and he said, man, God is really using your life. I'm going, really? You think that's possible? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, do you think I'm saved? He goes, well,
you went there.
This is going to sound arrogant, but no.
But you can be on his planet.
I'm going to get a second shot.
You're going to get a second
That's
shot?
That's what he said. He says afterwards.
Another go around?
After you die and all, I mean, God's going to make it clear to you that we were all right, and then you get a choice.
I think there's a couple of them with bicycles down in hell.
So if I can still get caffeine now,
just get another shot.
Get my Diet Coke in, and I'm going to get another shot when it's over.
But isn't this so bizarre, though?
Yeah, and I asked him, I said, what excludes me exactly? And he said, you haven't been baptized by an authorized baptizer.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I said, what is that exactly? He said, well, when Jesus reinstituted his church in the early 1800s, I'm getting the whole
moment. Oh, he snuck back.
Yeah, I mean, God, Jesus came back. Through Joseph and all, Smith, to
Joseph or through Joseph?
Through
Smith?
Him, whatever. Oh. I'm not sure the details. But anyway, it was to reestablish his church in the earth that had become so corrupt. And he appointed prophet and apostle. He said, you know, we believe there's a prophet today. I said, I believe there's many prophets today. Well, we have apostles. I believe in apostles. Oh, boy. It's probably not yours.
One up on you.
What was fun about this conversation, I thought was great fun, because we just had an honest exchange of how we see the world and God and how all that works out with no angst to convince the other. He had no angst to sign me up to be Mormon that evening. And I had no angst to convince him he's caught in a religious hierarchy, power, money, mad piece of garbage. I had no.
So what do you really think?
So I had no angst to convince him. We just talked. And it was, at one point he says, you know, I've got a Christian at work that won't even talk to me. Every time anything religious comes up, he just runs. Like I've got the plague or something. He said, I've never seen anybody just, a Christian mature enough to sit over there and just talk to me about this. And I said, well, I'm really kind of curious where you're at with it. So we got through the whole thing, and I told him about my friend, and I had a friend in Iowa, had a couple Mormon missionaries come see him. And as they were talking, you know, they got talking because he thought he was a follower of Jesus, and they said, oh, that's pretty neat. And they were showing him the whole Mormon thing. And then he said, at the end of it, he said something about, so, because they were trying to get him to embrace their deal or get them come back and talk more about it. And he said, so let me ask you a question. He said, am I going to hell? They said, you know, when we got here, probably not, but, you know, because it seemed like you were open to God and all, but now that you've heard the truth and are rejecting it, then yeah, you are.
Oh, no.
And he goes, so what favor did you do me by coming by here today? I was fine when you came through the door, and now suddenly, because you came over, I'm going to hell. As I asked him about it, I said, now what about this? He goes, oh, that's a problem having 18-year-olds on your front line of evangelism, which I think was hilarious.
That was good. That's an honest answer.
Great answer. So, but I was surprised because I've never really talked kind of behind the scenes. So this guy's in the bishopric of the local clubhouse here.
So he's one of the mucky mucks.
He's up there a bit and, you know, goes to temple once a month. And just hearing him talk about all that stuff with stars in his eye. And he talks about going to the temple. Not like, I've got to go. It's just, this is the most incredible experience in the world. And I'm just, it was so Catholic and so old covenant. I mean, it's the same leadership structures, temple focus, sacrifice. I felt bad for him. But I tell you, we next morning he was out in his yard doing some stuff. We got talking for a while more, and then he's invited me to a Mormon deal this weekend just to hear some guy talk about the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I don't know.
That'll be fun.
I might go. Depends on who's playing football then. But
you go with a football player. Just play with him.
This is the worst first week of football season. You got to have your priorities straight. So anyway, that was I'm interested to see where that relationship goes, because we had a lot of fun with them and great couple, great family. We talked, laughed, we had a great time. And we talked pretty much about our religious differences and different points of view about faith. And he asked some penetrating questions, and I did. And
that's
it was just a way to be together, to let the friendship start and see where God takes it. It was fun.
I got a couple little Mormon kids on Jonathan's soccer team I'm coaching.
Yeah.
And our picture day's on Sunday at 9:50.
I can't
do it. So, you know, so they were like, uh-oh, we can't go. I said, why not? Why can't you guys make it to pictures? I said, it's going to be kind of looking funny without the two of you. And they said, well, we have to, you know, be at church. I said, that's all right. I used to be a pastor. I can do a Sunday school lesson while we're taking our picture. And the rest of the kids go like, huh? I'm like, you used to be a pastor? No way!
I think that look was, oh my goodness, we have to sit through that.
Might have been.
Might have been that.
But the two little Warwick guys looked at me like, I'm sorry, that's not valid. You're just going the indoctrination of just going like...
It doesn't count.
It doesn't count. It's like at the authorized club.
You have not been baptized by an authorized baptist.
Well, now I understand some of that.
Okay, good.
But isn't it wild how there is such a profound indoctrination, not to issues of truth in a person,
yep,
but to structures in a system, that it's sort of like, that's the authorized deal. And if it's not that, then I'm sorry, it doesn't compute. I you know.
And trying to trace it back to something that validates it. The whole, you know, the Catholics get back to Peter somehow, even though Peter was not part of that whole deal. And these guys, you know, they just reload in 1830. Jesus showed up and started a whole new deal, and it's the only right one. But it's the same thing. We've got the real deal. And you guys are lost.
Yeah, everyone who seems to champion their flag or their tribe, it is interesting that it's sort of like, you know, the subtle arrogance of, you know what, we got it, we're right, and, you know, I thought it at least was marvelous when you asked him point blank, that he kind of said, well, yeah, no.
It's going to sound arrogant.
At least he was honest. It's kind of like, oh, it's perfect. At least I would, you know, is up front and center as opposed to this subtle, you know, evasion. You just go like, nah. Wow.
Yeah, and I told him, I don't think anybody's statement of truth is necessarily arrogant. And if you believe what you believe, it's your conviction of conscience. It's not arrogant to say, yeah, I believe you lost. It may sound arrogant, and obviously we believers get dinged on that by our world oftentimes when asked, does God hear the prayers of Jews or Muslims? And then Jerry Falwell, well, he's not going to say that anymore. And James Kennedy's gone too, so.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I missed that one.
Well, I'm kind of in one of those seasons of my life, quite honestly, where I'm getting just a ton of mail from pastor types who are still in it going, I think I need to get out, but I don't want to get out. I don't know how to get out. And so it's been, I guess it makes me kind of, because I'm standing, having been there now, gone through the whole pain of getting out of it, which was incredibly painful, and looking back going, wow, I'd get out. But
run!
I don't really, yeah. But I don't really want to tell anybody that until God's told them.
No, I don't really think you should. I think the only voice that they can really respond to well is the Lord's. And when he says it, then it's like, you know what? Yeah, it's right and it's time. It's interesting. I was on the phone just before this with the bookstore guy at the Fuller Seminary.
No.
All excited about the shack.
Really?
They wanted a bunch of copies. And he said, and I noticed you have this other book.
Yeah.
Entitled, So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. And so he was wanting a little bit of a lowdown on that one. And he was courageous and ordered two.
He did. Wow.
So, going to mess with the seminaries.
And the new He Loves Me book is out?
It is. Oh, that cover is awesome.
Well, if we even, I even got email from the my account rep at the printers who saw a copy of the cover, and he goes, I see book covers all the time. This
that
has got
one,
to be the best one I've seen in 2 decades.
It is so marvelous.
That's a shout-out to Dave Aldrich in Rhode Island did that for us.
Well done, Dave.
Way to go, Dave. And then we also heard some other friends this week, Rich and Margo, who take our podcast on their Saturday drives and listen and talk together. And he says, Wayne and Brad, I hope this doesn't offend you, and I know you're a grown-up man, but. This is where I'm always scared.
But.
And it's all capped but. So I so appreciate the childlikeness I sense in your times together.
That's me.
Childlike?
That's probably me.
Really? Your increased sense of wonder of our Father's love is most contagious. Our lives continue to be so very enriched as we weekly drink in what Father's put on your hearts. Isn't that kind of
fun? That's cool. That's cool. I do. I feel like, you know what? God has taken the... Because I used to be really driven and passionate. And it's not that I'm not, but I am a whole lot happier and funnier now.
I thought you were funny the first time I met you.
I know.
You're hilarious.
I've always enjoyed laughing. But the seriousness, it's like somehow there's a lighter side to following him than I knew when I was kind of in the whole grind of stuff.
Yeah, the unforced rhythms of grace.
There you go.
As opposed to that.
Yeah, that thing.
That backpack full of rocks. Anyway, I thought I'd read this to you in light of what we were just talking about. And by the way, Rich and Margie, I was just with them when I was up in Ontario. So a good shout out to you guys and all the folks we knew up there and met up there, and hope to get back someday. But back to what we were talking about earlier. Got this letter from a brother who's part of a denomination in the Midwest part of the country. How's that? I won't identify much more than that.
There you go.
He's really having some concerns. And so he wrote his district superintendent. And I asked him, I said, can we use this letter on the air? Because this is just the way people think. This is a great way. And this is the most gracious district superintendent letter you're ever going to get back. He starts his letter to the district superintendent this way. I said, I want to run something by you that will probably make you beat me up.
Well, that's honest.
And he says, the more I study scripture, the more difficulty I see in sustaining the system that we are in. When Jesus said he would build his church, he really did not give us a blueprint, and probably because he knew we would mess it up royally. We have turned what he started as a living organism and began an organization. Where do we get off doing that? And how do we biblically justify our governing boards and position of pastors and blah, blah, blah? Well, here's the response, and you can interrupt me through this, because there's a whole lot in this letter to talk about that's fun. He says, this is the response from the district soup. Wow, you're really in a season of analysis and deconstructionist thought.
Oh, there you go. That's what talks about seminars at seminary.
Very postmodern of you.
Oh, very nice.
You know what I think that name-calling does? And it is name-calling. To say deconstructionist thought, postmodern, is I can put you in a little club now.
I'm just buttonholing you into that little thought.
And I'm marginalizing the way you're thinking. Now I don't have to deal with it as possible truth. It's just part of this postmodern deconstructionist angst.
We do art at our services.
Oh, boy. He said, a slight pummeling is only required. It's not to beat you, but I'll give you a slight pummeling.
There you go.
He said, I do take your thoughts seriously, yet it's hard for me to consider such significant changes without stepping outside the boundaries of the trust I've been given and the mandate from the Lord I serve under. I've mentioned to you before that I used to throw stones at so much of the church and the denominational structure until the Lord rebuked me and clearly commanded me to stop the stones and work to change things from the inside.
He made me a supervisor.
Yeah.
That's when he got promoted.
Well, as the letter goes on, you kind of, exactly what are you changing from the inside? I mean, the idea is I'm going to fight from the inside. But
the Lord rebuked him, said, stop trying to do what I really told you, just do...
Well, and if you're throwing stones, I think God might tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, drop a few rocks. We're not throwing rocks here. But he's liking it to a larger thing of, I've got this trust I've been given, and it involves this structure. So don't, as you'll see, he goes on, don't challenge that. You can't ask those questions and stay here. Basically, the letter's an ultimatum. It's a very gracious ultimatum, but it's an ultimatum nonetheless.
To not ask the questions?
Yeah, you just can't do it.
See, but how is that possible? Because I don't think anyone just says, well, I'm going to start asking these questions. I think the questions get posed inside you. I don't know anybody that just says, well, I'm just going to start asking these questions. I think all of a sudden they pop up.
Well, he said he's had the same questions.
The supervisor did.
Yeah, I've had those same questions. He'll get even more clear about that down the road, what he's done with them. But notice it went from asking questions to you're throwing rocks. And God rebuked me from throwing rocks. So stop throwing rocks. Well, I'm throwing rocks. I'm just asking some questions. And he's asking it inside the deal. He's asking it to his supposedly superior, supervisor. He hasn't, paraded him out yet in front of the rest of the flock he's in charge of. But notice this now. You're in a different place and role. Let's be clear here. You're not the place I'm in. He said, but your questions are bedrock to your ability to remain there.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So much of what you're laying out would require such significant and dramatic changes that it would completely befuddle the sheep you are charged to care for.
Yeah, because they can't think for themselves either.
Be very, very careful to process this with a very safe and secure short list of people. That's just discussing it. What if you were to remain there and implement such changes? Would your leaders embrace it? Would the congregation? Would the denomination? As I say, your questions are bedrock to your ability to live there.
He's about to go to the Sanhedrin.
Well, here's the interesting deal. Some honest questions that even would be enough biblically based that you think anybody with half a heart for Scripture would say,
let's wrestle with these.
These are questions worth asking.
Right.
But we can't because you'll lose your job. You'll befuddle the sheep. Boy, the last thing we want is befuddled sheep. We don't want sheep asking.
As if there's no befuddlement right now.
Yeah. We just want them quietly sitting there doing what we've asked them to do.
Please attend and please pay.
So even the asking a short list, if this gets out, your ability to gracious.
This will undermine everything.
It's gracious, but it's an ultimatum nonetheless.
He's supposed to take the blue pill and go back to his happy little hole.
Yeah, well, he's trying to get him to, too. I personally am not called or driven to question the fundamental role of an elder who is the first amongst equals. I don't know where you got that.
But that's not even what he's questioning.
Well, it was part of the question. I didn't read all of his letter because it would just take too much time. But he is talking about the governing boards and pastor, how we do it. He said, I'm satisfied with our interpretation of the role of the lead elder we call pastor. I'm comfortable with that. Can't find it in Scripture anyway. I remember meeting one guy in Thailand who had read The Naked Church, and he said, listen, if the senior pastor is not in Scripture, it is the natural extension of Scripture. I mean, whose world? Not my world. I'm not thinking it's that at all. We are certainly an organization and rail against this all the time. We do. We rail against the fact that we're an organization. So
back to his rocks.
We need to dismantle a great deal to release the ecclesia to function as an organism. So, see, he's seeing it. We really do. If you're serious about that, we got to do a whole lot of ripping up. But that requires permission. And you know, I've given that to you to dismantle what doesn't make sense organizationally within the limits I can get away with. But it requires an alignment of such a vision with your leaders and congregation. You can't just be ticked and start taking a sledgehammer to stuff.
Well, that didn't sound like that's what his question was.
I asked. Well, see, it's amazing how destructive people interpret honest questions when those honest questions get to the bedrock of a system. This is the whole deal, I think. What's behind?
Well, then the system is more of a house of cards because, you know, the starting point for all this, you were talking to your neighbor, and you guys were asking some pretty challenging, you know, missile shots over the bow kind of questions, and you took them like two men, which is like, hey, fine, and there was a security. Now, as whacked as I might think some of the answers were.
Are you pointing my neighbor's house?
Yeah, I am. Okay. He's that way, right?
Watch it.
The reality
I don't want
is
anybody to know. They'll come up here and hurt my neighbor.
The security that someone has and where they're at is so helpful because then you can ask honest questions. If you're so insecure with what it is that you think you know, that honest inquiry is the enemy. That just doesn't work.
And in the face of Scripture, isn't protecting these religious systems, particularly these historic ones we built over long periods of time, to justify their existence in the face of what Jesus simply said about his family, I think an honest question may look like a sledgehammer, but it's not. And people who ask these questions oftentimes get isolated as, you're the problem.
You're rebellious.
You're the problem for asking the question.
Critical, judgmental.
Yeah, what's wrong with you? We got a nice little deal going here, and you're kind of messing it up with your thing. Stop it! Put your rocks down. Look, I'm just trying to read Jesus here, and I'm looking at what we're doing over here, and I see a little bit of a disparity and thought we might want to talk about that. And he even says, yeah, there'd be a whole lot we'd dismantle to be, but it takes permission. You don't have it.
And right, and I've been entrusted with this role.
And I don't have
I have a tradition to upkeep. See, that's the thing that always just blows my mind. You're just going like, what? You're honestly saying, yes, there's truth to the questions you're asking, but I'm sorry. I have this job that means I can't really ask or address those.
I've got to
be doing this.
Wait till the next paragraph. Wait till the... Yeah. Our governing board structure and ultimately our constitution are the best interpretation we in this tribe have of how we agreed together to structure ourselves. I would prefer an elder structure that is self-perpetuating, with no term limits, with elder authority to appoint them. I joined this tribe, and it was already predetermined when I was young. I was formed enough in my philosophy to object. Now that I'm older, wiser, and more foolish, at least he's honest, I like, I'm wiser and more foolish, I live with it because it gives me the platform to shout wherever I can that it needs to change.
What? What?
Isn't that great double talk? Look.
He is a politician in a district supervisor role.
And isn't this the challenge for people who hunger for something beyond the system and start to question the system? And then the choice is, are you going to be loyal to the tribe? Are you going to be loyal to our organization? Is the loyalty to Christ and Christ alone?
Jesus said, follow me. Up on the Mount of Transfiguration.
Well, that's because this denomination didn't exist then. Otherwise, he might have said, follow
the Father
them.
Said, this is my son. Listen to him. And here you got this whole thing. Jesus didn't say, hey, come follow my system. Come follow my rules. Come follow my organization. He said, come follow me.
Yeah, and this guy would probably agree with that. But our tribe has agreed to do it this way. And if you are in this tribe, you don't have the right to ask those questions.
And you know what? There is some total legitimacy to that.
There is. And I tell people all the time, you know what? If you're in a tribe, and here's the passion a lot of people have, I'm going to stay and revive this thing.
If that's when you get to pick a fight.
And well, even if they're very generous of spirit and they're not going to pick up stones and fight, but they're saying, I can stay here and be an influence for good. And if you can where you are, God bless you. But historically...
But I don't even know if I'd agree with that, you know, God bless you. Because I think when you are dealing with a system of man, and that's what most all the clubs are.
Wow.
I
mean, that's pretty harsh language there, buddy.
I think pretty much they are systems of men. And I don't know that you do have the right and the authority or the privilege or even the wisdom to try to monkey with those power structures if it isn't yours. If you're in a position of that where you can have that as a dialogue, then go for it. But most of the time, at least the folks I know, they're probably, you know, a pretty powerful person within the midst of, you know, as far as their own personality, and they're going to reform the whole thing. And it's like, I don't think there's something wrong with it, just that I think at the most of the time you're ripping wineskins.
Right, exactly.
You're putting the new wine that Jesus says doesn't get put in the old wineskin.
Right, and
but I'm going to.
And I think it would be incredibly disrespectful at every level to be part of a group that functions a certain way and stand up in the middle of it and say, we're going to do it differently because I think we should do it differently. Jesus said we should do it differently, and you guys are all wrong, and I'm all right. I don't know where that would ever be appropriate, to be honest. But what people are caught in, I do know people, let me say this first, I do know people who live in systems like that, who see through the whole political hoopla of it, but are there to love people and there to give their lives to people and there to serve people. And I think that's what I mean. God bless you. If you're there, but if you think, and what you're saying, which I agree with, if you think you can change that, you thinking by yelling and screaming or even being nice, what I think I see historically and what I see anecdotally in people I have known with all this stuff is people who stay in a system to try and change it are way more often changed by that system than they are an influence to change it.
I mean, I recognized in my own context, it's like God started to pose some of these questions inside me. And then you know, I start having lunch with a guy like you. And that just
lunch.
And that just gets a problem. But I recognize, you know what? It wasn't my call to try to force this whole thing my way or the way I was seeing. I just sort of recognized, gosh, I think the direction that this is headed versus what God is drawing me into, they're two different deals. And so I kind of just went right to the top and said, you know, I don't know what's being built here. I know what's happening inside me, and what do I do about that? That was enough to cause an absolute war.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, oh, gosh.
And as best you can, you don't ask other people to pay the price of your journey. You know, if God's calling me to something,
mm-hmm.
and I want everybody else to fit in so they'll keep paying my salary and doing my deal, that's inherently an issue.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to force people along to something that they don't see yet. And this guy, you know, what I thought was sad about this letter was he has seen it. He has asked these questions. But what he's resolved it in is my loyalty to the club, my loyalty to the system from which I derive my check and from which my heritage is in, is more significant than my biblical wrestling with what is the Church of Jesus Christ in the world.
It might be his commitment to paying his mortgage.
It could, yeah, sure, that's part of it. But it seems more than that. I'm going to prefer to lead change from the inside. And, you know, if you can get enough leaders to follow you and enough masses to go with you, then you can affect change from the inside. But those stories are painfully rare. Once something becomes a system, and I think what most people misunderstand about it, it's not like you can't have a good organization. You could for maybe a limited time. The problem with an organization is it has to conform people to survive. It has to get people to fit in. It has to define decision-making roles. And all of those things seem to, in the history of humankind, seems to lead people after following their own affections rather than doing right. what God's asked us to do in the world.
Yeah,
it's about power and money and security.
What's so interesting to me is when you look at, you know, the life of Jesus is revealed in the Gospels. Jesus never got consumed by the demand of, quote, the crowd, that he didn't have time for that individual. And you're just going like, gosh, one of the hardest things I ever did in the midst of, you know, leading this wonderful thing is the demands of the whole thing made individuals an absolute blur to me. I don't
exactly.
have time for you.
Yeah.
I have to take care of all this.
Yeah.
You just go like, what's wrong with this? That is not how Jesus behaved, because I don't think he was ever thinking, I am doing all of this. I think his focus was, I am relationally invested with the life that's in front of me and the people that are around me that I'm loving. And when the focus is there and you're not trying to make an efficient system, see, I think almost in the name of efficiency, we will go into human sacrifice because as individuals, I'm sorry, the needs of this whole thing outweigh your
particular...
The needs
of the many outweigh the needs of the one.
And
yeah.
it's more like, golly.
Can you imagine trying to even form a group if you've got Zacchaeus in it and the woman at the well and blind Bartimaeus and Judas and
yeah,
Peter?
Yeah, no,
and...
I pastored that crowd.
Okay, I got that then.
Okay, it was a challenge.
It is impossible. And this is what the guy says at the end. He says... if you can't live with that reality about making change from the inside and your platform being limited, if you can't live with that reality and the lack of immediate change, then you've got to decide if that's a deal breaker. And you can't think on this too long. There are many throughout that time that have felt our church systems are foolish and unbiblical and chose to leave them and start their own deal or just drop out. Hence, we have the Vineyard, Calvary Chapel, Lutherans, and all the other 500-plus denominations in the world, much less the non-denominational guys out there who run their own show with little or no accountability.
There you go. That's
make your
word.
Call, my friend. That's how he ends the letter.
Make your
make
call.
Make your call, my friend.
Ooh, that's a gauntlet.
Stay inside where we're safe. We're outside. There's a lot of other junk. You notice he doesn't
why
have much.
Tigers and bears. Oh, my.
As much as he's going to defend this system, he kind of looks down on every other system that's out there. You
right.
know, you can form your own deal like those guys,
well,
those
a,
guys,
he
and those
in
guys.
A district supervisor throne. It's so bizarre when you do look at the whole dynamic of systems because, you know, I have some dear friends that I have to say for the sake of relationship with the people that they are, I think God has placed them with, you know what? I think they have more in common from conclusions with kind of like where I'd say we are, then it seems real incongruous for them to be in the system and the position that they're at. But I think they're very much called to be there for the fruit of the relationships that they're loving and serving.
Yeah.
And it's working in as much as that is their focus. But if you're like trying to change an it, you just got a war in the developing.
And if you get on the leadership teams of those things, you will see how quickly the passions of faith give way to the needs of the organization to survive.
And the ambitions of power.
And so you've really just got to stay out of it. You really have to stay out of the leadership structure. I think, yeah, can you hang out, love people?
Oh, absolutely.
But the power of a system, when you try to change it, it will change you because you've got to change it on the same platform in which it exists, which is political power. So you've got to gain enough power to get your way, and you're already playing a game that Jesus didn't play. He just loved
people. And you're
going
to be invited to do things which are the very things you're trying to reform. I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing that didn't work for me. I'm just going like, gosh, I can't do the whole control manipulation thing, and yet that's what these structures are most effectively run by.
I think that was our choice at the end, Sarah and me. We could have won that fight we were in. We had the power to do it institutionally, had the power to do it in terms of the affection of people. But we would have had to become like them to win over them in terms of manipulating that power to get our way. And even though we might have felt it was a more godly way, the way of getting there wasn't godly.
Yeah, the compromise, the negotiation of your own conscience.
And that's what sounded so
you just
horrible.
Like, oh, that doesn't.
You know what I wish we could do for these guys? Like this, I know I'm talking to the guy who wrote this letter, and I'm, like I said, I got four or five others right now that I'm talking to. I would love to just, you do a Rip Van Winkle moment where you could move them 2 years out of the deal. Because I remember how confusing it was to have these questions living in these structural realities. And it just, it's like James talked about being double-minded. Yeah, we want God's stuff, but we got to do this to pay the bills. And it's like
inviting you to jump off the cliff.
So
you're
confusing.
Just going like, whoa, I don't know I can fly yet.
And I say to these guys, if you would just get out of it for 2 years, if you just, 2 years from now, if you are no longer thinking this is the only way God touches the world, this is what we have to do. If we don't do this, no one's going to, if you were away from that for 2 years, you would see with such clarity how much of that straw stuff we build up is just that. It's straw. It's just
wood, hay, and stubble.
It's not real. You don't have to serve it. No one's going to die if you don't. People may hate you for a time, but your life, who you are, who God's made you to be, is still going to be an evidence to the people around you.
But isn't that such a bizarre thing? People may hate you for a time.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, if this is about Jesus, you know, the guy who is love.
Yeah, but we got to, you know, if you're not here.
And if you disagree with me,
if you're running around with a sledgehammer, which is just an honest question, but if you're running around with a sledgehammer, we got to take you out. Because it unravels. It all exists in this very thin veneer of, we have to do it this way. Forsake not the assembling. This is what the writer of Hebrews was talking about. That sheer veneer is what holds all that together. And if people ask those questions, they're going to come out on the other side saying, Jesus didn't do this. He didn't start one of these. He didn't make his disciples be somewhere at 10 o'clock every Sunday morning.
Well, no, I mean, it looks like the entire Old Testament was a journey unto the person of Jesus. And once he's there, then the systems kind of make a exit stage left back into the Old Testament systems and structures, and just going like, wait a minute, all of that was leading up to him.
But you can't see it when you're in there. That's the deal. If you can step out, listen to this letter. This is from a friend of mine. I've never met him, but we've corresponded enough by email. I feel like I know this guy and I know people he knows, but and this is Jim. He's from Northern California. He said, 8 years ago, I left the organization he'd been a pastor of for some time. I thought to do a new thing. I was going to find relationally minded people who just love God and meet with them. I found the meeting in the basement of a veterans building. I joined them and soon became the leader.
Ooh,
big mistake. 2 years later, the group disbanded. I found another group and partnered with another fellow. Together, we spent 2 years training that group how to be relational and how to love God from the heart. Then we decided that we were now fully trained and ready to start a different church. 4 years later, with tears running down my cheek, I told that group, some of which I had become good friends with, that I could no longer do this. I told them that I'd been a leader for so long, I had no idea how not to be one. And I told them that I would like to learn how to just be a friend. It has been only 4 months, and I find myself so conflicted. On some levels, I have learned so much, and much of what I learned is that it brought me to the place where I realized I couldn't do it anymore. But I have this pull in me to want to get something going. I justify it because it seems so right to me that we do something. I'm not, and I really don't think I will. So last weekend, I called another couple and told them my wife and I were going to the county fair, and did they want to join us? They did, and it was great. When we went back to their house to pick up our car, they invited us in for coffee. As we sat there, she asked my wife a question, non-doctrinal, just real-life journey stuff. I heard my wife pour out some real-life journey wisdom, something I hadn't heard in decades, probably because of that male leadership thingy. We drove home, and she said, I think that's how it's supposed to be. This weekend, the same couple has invited us to join them on a family campout and boating at the lake. Fun stuff. I think a lifetime of indoctrination in both dogma and structure has brainwashed us to the place where we no longer know how to just be. If there isn't a purpose to our getting together, we have been taught that there's no value to the gathering. Pray that the leadership role I resigned from will resign itself from my heart.
Ooh, wow.
Boy, he's 4 months away from that. And he's beginning to see. I mean, he's beginning to see that just spending time with another couple and the depth of wisdom and life friends and friends of friends share together can contain the life of the body of Christ. That we can somehow smash that into a box and put a label on it and commit people to it is probably the biggest deception.
And then reproduce it and manufacture it.
It's the biggest deception that good brothers and sisters all over the world keep living under.
I wonder if there isn't sort of the insecure need inside a lot of us. I know it was in me, the need to somehow achieve something, to build something, to make something spiritually. So I have to sort of demonstrate my value. And it's like what's different today is I sort of feel like my value and being loved is about as secure as it's ever been. And there isn't this drive to have to do something. There's a lot of things I'm doing.
Right.
But there isn't the, I have to, and there isn't the need to then stamp some measure of achievement on it as if, you know, it's like I'm doing things that I know that the Lord has put in front of me, and I'm thrilled with where they're going. But I no longer have the impulse need to have to kind of control the outcome.
Yeah, or try to put a group together to validate that. I know even times when we've had some, you and I, our family's had some great fellowship. We've had some great fellowship with other people that have been around when we've done that. There have been a couple of times where we've just, you know, kind of like had a night where, you know, somebody pulls out a guitar, we're going to try to worship or do something. Yeah, you're already laughing because you're about 2 songs.
I hate those.
And she's about 2 songs going, why are we doing this again?
You just ruined it. Somebody ruined it.
And it's not saying we can't pull out a guitar and sing. But there's something that it's
but
something
when
that,
you're at a gathering and there's that religious impulse that says, okay, to make this valid, we need to have our time of worship.
Or opening prayer or
you just
Bible
like,
study.
Oh, my
or,
gosh. We've just stepped back into that which God has kind of freed us from as far as a mindset, not an activity.
Right.
But a mindset that now this is valid because before – the real sharing of genuine life without agenda, somehow that didn't count.
Yeah.
And you just go like, what?
And I know, and you can watch people in the room glaze over. And it's not that people can't get in a room who are good friends and know each other and times singing will be one of the things they enjoy doing together.
Yeah.
But it's different than doing that as a point of our life together and
validating this.
We need to have a meeting and, you know, somebody needs to open in prayer and then we'll have a song thing and just look at the room and watch people glaze over.
Yeah.
I'll be glad when this is done.
This is probably a whole nother podcast, but gosh, what that letter brings up is here you see the repetitive pattern that this guy has internally. It's as if he feels like, well, you know, I'm called to lead. And so I've got to assert that gift or that ability, that sense of calling. I mean, whatever you want to, however you want to glaze over that. But that's almost as if that gets in the way and becomes a point of disempowerment for the others. And I do think it's like, you know what? God does have, he has people that function in gifts of abilities of leadership. And for tasking together, gosh, is that ever helpful?
Yeah.
You know? Because otherwise it's like this seems a confused mess. But it's different from the sense that I am a title-bearing one of these, which Jesus said, don't call yourselves that.
Yeah.
And then situationally, because of what's in front of you, tasking together with some measure of organization and efficiency. That's fine, but don't assume that that's always meant to be played out.
Yeah, I think structure that facilitates God's working or God's activity among a group of people is a great thing. The structure that tries to design a group or define a group or keep a group forever.
That always messes it up.
That's what, yeah. And like this guy becomes, you know, he gets to this group and he's just one of the group. And then 2 years they make him a leader. He goes, big mistake. It is, because now that's a perpetual position. That's not just you do what God's asked you to do and we'll do what God's asked us to do. No, we'll let you do whatever it is that you want to do and we'll just become passive followers. And that story has been repeated a million times over.
And I also think it's a mistake to assume that if you get together, that God is necessarily going to declare a common task and purpose.
No.
I think that's one of the big little Christian mistakes is that, well, if we have a group together, we got to do something. It's like, maybe just enjoy each other.
Yes.
God forbid. Should be that simple. And it's like, I think there's a fundamental lack of belief that it is through that kind of simplicity that God can actually perhaps change everything.
And you do what God's called you to do. And
that's
God
it.
May put some other folks alongside you, whether or not they're folks you get with every week or anything like that. God will put folks near you to help you do what he's asked you to do. A lot of that, I think, is more task-based than it is, and this is probably a whole other podcast, ministry creating. We always create ministries that last forever instead of, I'm going to do the next thing God's asked me to do. And I'm going to do the next thing God asked me to do. And I'm not going to try and start anything in perpetuity to somehow justify that.
We got to talk about that.
Sometime we do, but we're really late here. Yeah. But I love the fact that people are asking questions and, man, just trying to see through it. And I would say, man, 2 years, just get 2 years away from it all. And it's amazing how the sky begins to clear when you're no longer conflicted by doing things the structure demands and instead living at the pleasure of the King.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.